You can tell the world is normal again because a billionaire mogul as Mad Netflix used stolen footage, footage he filmed of himself for decades, in a documentary about him. That's like calling the cops because someone published your diary after you left it on a bus. Sean Diddy Combs has been shooting himself since he was 19. He says he was building his own documentary, which makes sense because nothing says control the narrative like 40 years of self-recorded B-roll of you trying on outfits. And now he's suing Netflix for not asking permission to use his footage, and mad that 50 Cent, his longtime enemy, helped produce the series. The headline is The Reckoning. The actual beef is they didn't send him a Netflix screener. Tragic. Netflix says they acquired the footage legally. Diddy's lawyers say it was commissioned for his documentary. 50 Cent is, on Instagram, doing what he does best, being socially adequate and legally ruthless. Lawyers threaten more lawsuits. He previously sued NBC Universal for $100 million. He's appealing a conviction and apparently pitched the Trump administration about a pardon. At this point, you'd think the only unresolved thing in his life is whether the Venn diagram of celeb entitlement and poor taste overlaps. This is pure first world grievance. Amid criminal charges and dozens of civil suits alleging serious harm, the urgent issue is that the streaming company didn't RSVP to a screening. The real crime isn't the footage, it's that no one forwarded him the private preview link. That, my friends, is how you know you're rich. Your biggest problem is an email you never got.
The trophy glitters, the crowd roars, and the undefeated small-town team lifts their symbol of triumph into a night that smells faintly of pine and something much fouler. The man who should be at the center of that picture vanished into the mountains 11 days ago, reportedly carrying a gun, and is now wanted on multiple counts of possessing child pornography and soliciting minors online. The parade goes on anyway. Police say they were heading to his house when he was already gone. A missing person report waited the mandated 24 hours to be filed. A $5,000 reward appears on a federal Facebook post, like a novelty prize in a raffle for justice. Drones and heat-sensing cameras sweep the ridges while the town files its grief and its denial into the same social media thread. This isn't an isolated mess. Last year, another Union High employee pleaded guilty to sex crimes. It's the same tiny legal orbit, same defense attorney, same school, same stunned community. The ritual is familiar: allegation, legal fog, administrative leave, public prayers for closure, and a team that must be allowed to play lest the town's identity unravel. The players keep winning. The interim coach steers the ship. Neighbors bring buses of cheering students from other schools because solidarity now looks like pom-poms and block letters on Facebook. Parents insist the athletes are innocent. Online commentators insist this season must not be interrupted. The scoreboard blinks on. Accountability is politely asked to wait its turn. Technology and search dogs hunt a man who might be lost, hiding, or gone by choice. Clerks and prosecutors pass the papers along. The family prays for clarity while the community prays for normalcy. Both prayers get broadcast and monetized in the same breath. Watch the Pestilox trophy again. It's not just metal and polish. It's an altar where the town pins its hope, its denial, and its unwillingness to let scandal displace a ritual that keeps everything feeling intact. The ritual holds for now. When institutions learn to treat reputation as a higher law than safety, the collapse they fear starts looking less accidental and more inevitable.
From USA Today, Citizen Times USA Today Network. He played a cop on TV. Now he's training to become one. Jerry O'Donnell spent 40 years pretending to wear a badge for the camera. Then a hurricane reminded him there are still real badges, real floods, and real people who need something other than a good cameo. At 65, after a retirement move to Asheville, he traded scripted authority for morning push-ups with recruits young enough to be his grandchildren, and passed lie detector tests that no one on television ever asked him to take. There's a quiet comedy in that. We spend decades rehearsing versions of ourselves, jobs, marriages, hobbies, like actors waiting for applause. Sometimes the applause never comes. Sometimes it's a storm that shows you applause won't rebuild a house. So you change your role. You go from playing someone who keeps order to actually trying to keep order. It's equal parts bravery, midlife gumption, and a small bet that identity can be purchased at the intersection of necessity and willpower. The absurdity is delicious. Hollywood trained him to make authority believable. The Academy asks him to make authority true. The town needed bodies. He had experience feigning confidence. Society hands out existential resumes, younger recruits, a history in the army, a production company that once folded. Proof that reinvention is not reserved for the callow or the young. It's a civic swap meet where people trade past lives for new purposes and hope that the new fit won't pinch. There's also a deeper laugh, darker and less comfortable. Departments across the country are shorthanded because of pandemics, protests, policy fights, and the slow erosion of trust. A community loses so much that a 65-year-old actor becomes a recruitment. Solution: we like to imagine institutions are steady machines. Instead, they sputter and call on improbable volunteers. That makes the badge at once more meaningful and more absurd. An emblem of order pinned on a world that keeps inventing fresh ways to be disorderly. O'Donnell's story answers, in its own way, the big question: what do we do when our original plotline runs out? For some, it's quiet resignation. For others, actors, veterans, people who simply can't stop starting, it's another audition. The public calls it service. He calls it privilege. Both are true, and neither fixes the structural problem. People need purpose, and institutions need people, but neither guarantee each other. We repair one another in fits and starts, like neighbors hauling debris with two different instructions for a single sofa. And there's irony in the empathy training he mentions. After years playing tough men on screen, he learns to meet people as people. Acting taught him to imagine a backstory. Policing asks him to respond to one. Performance becomes preparation for compassion. It's almost poetic. If you like your poetry with a side of uncomfortable recognition that the person who once handed you a fake warrant now carries a real one. So what does this teach us, besides that careers are negotiable, and that hurricanes are surprisingly effective life planners? Maybe that adults are improvisers, forever swapping masks until one fits. Maybe that meaning is less a grand narrative than a small, stubborn choice to show up and do something that matters to someone else. Or maybe it teaches us that life is a long, messy casting call, and the universe has an odd sense of timing. Either way, if you've ever worried your life was a rerun, take comfort. Reruns can be edited, recut, cast in a different light. And if that fails, there's always hurricane season to force a rewrite.
The Capitalist's Fever Dream. A billionaire squabble over who gets to sell the same ugly truth back to the public. That is the market now. A streaming giant prepares to publish a docuseries produced by a reality-bending rival. The subject's lawyers holler, stolen footage. Executives insist the rights are clean, and the trailer drops like a new product launch. The argument is not about justice or truth. It is about ownership of spectacle. Sean Combs' argument that footage he shot for his own archival vanity project was misappropriated greases a familiar machine. Celebrities spend decades recording their lives as personal IP. Then the industry treats those intimate archives like inventory. When those tapes become inconvenient, ownership becomes litigation. When the tapes sell subscriptions, they become legal and moral collateral. That's capitalism at its purest. Every scandal repackaged, every private moment auctioned to the highest bidder. Curtis Jackson's role as producer transmutes a personal feud into content strategy. Longtime enemies trade lawsuits and social media jabs while studios monetize the feud's drama. The studios claimed legal rights, and the defendant's threats of more lawsuits collapse into the same currency. Attention. Netflix and its director tout legal clearances. Combs' camp threatens a $1 billion defamation history and notes past suits. Both sides are less interested in truth than in controlling the narrative ledger. The broader ugliness is unavoidable. A mogul convicted on some counts, acquitted on others, now serving a 4-year term and appealing, presses for presidential mercy, an appeal made to the very administration reinstalled in 2024. Pardons become another line item in the inventory of influence. Civil suits stack up into the dozens, some alleging crimes against minors. Dismissals and continuations coexist with public relations and private settlements. Victims and evidence become bargaining chips. Legal teams function as crisis managers, and the public consumes the aftermath like serialized entertainment. Prisons, platforms, and publicity firms have become interchangeable. Places to contain bodies, libraries to mine for clips, and spin factories to shield reputations. The executive who claims to have moved heaven and earth to secure footage reads like a tech CEO boasting supply chain mastery. Lawsuits are less about remedy than about gatekeeping who gets to monetize suffering. This is a system designed so that even ruin yields revenue. The spectacle of fall, filmed, edited, sold, keeps the lights on. The rich wage vendettas that double as content strategies, the law is rented as a public relations tool. Justice is slow, expensive, and optional for those who can pay. The movie of moral collapse is already in production, and the streaming wars are paying for the seats.